Off top, glass frogs use transparency to hide from predators. However, red blood cells reflect green light. So when they sleep, they hide all their red blood cells in their kidney. Play the music.
This is the Dominique Foxworth Show.
What's up, Charlie?
I am stunned by that fact. It's a new one for me.
It's new for a lot of people, but I mean, I just be knowing things. I think it's the kidney. Maybe it was the liver. Either way, it doesn't matter. Nobody can fact check me. It's not like you got Google or anything. If you do have Google, you've probably been looking up the difference between exclusive and non-exclusive franchise tags because Lamar Jackson is the news. And I suspect that we're going to spend the entire show talking about Lamar Jackson because there's so many different avenues to go down this conversation. If we have time to go to Saquon or Daniel Jones' contract, those are interesting conversations to have. Also, we might be able to save them for next week. But let's start with Lamar Jackson. And I think yesterday morning, which I guess is Tuesday morning, is when I first talked to Dan Graziano before we were doing Get Up. And he said that he's hearing they're going to put the non-exclusive franchise tag on Lamar Jackson. And the first thing that came to my mind was collusion. It was the first thing that came to my mind. And that's like, of course, my union background has me on high alert at all times for these sorts of things. And I'm not accusing anybody of collusion. But when I heard non-exclusive franchise tag, like that's not something you put on a player that you want to keep. And I also thought, unless you have an understanding that no one else is going to go after him. So, again, I'm not making any accusations, but it seems kind of suspicious that immediately after Lamar has the tag placed on him or offered to him, a bunch of teams come out and say, yeah, we're not interested. A bunch of teams who should obviously be interested say that they are not interested.
And we should explain quickly the non-exclusive franchise tag.
Okay,
allows other teams to negotiate with Lamar Jackson, come to terms on a contract, and if they agree on a deal, the Ravens will have the opportunity to accept two first-round picks in return for that deal. Teams cannot poison pill that contract. Or match it.
Or the Ravens can match it and keep him. So, I mean, you say teams can't poison pill that contract, but
Steve Hutchinson rule.
Yeah. That was changed back in the CBA that I was a part of negotiating. They can't poison pill it, which means you can't put like some prohibitive thing in there. Like every time he plays in Baltimore Stadium, you have to pay him $10 million, which then would make it hard for Baltimore to sign him, that sort of stuff. But you can essentially, if you have enough cap space, you can front load the contract enough to poison pill it and make it impossible for the Ravens to sign him without ridding their roster of a bunch of players. So it's a kind of poison pill that you could still use. So it's a risk. It's an incredibly risky thing to do that I can't imagine anyone doing with a quarterback that they wanted to keep. Dak Prescott was the last guy that we remember going through this. He was exclusively tagged. They didn't do the non-exclusive with Dak Prescott because they didn't want to give the opportunity for anybody else to swoop in and take him. So the argument for so I think it's obvious why people are starting. And I was surprised, honestly, with the reaction on Wednesday. Everyone, it felt like, in sports media kind of jumped to the conclusion, the collusion conclusion, which I was surprised by. But I will say that the argument on the other side, why they would do a non-exclusive, they're at a stalemate with Lamar Jackson, and they're telling him, you're not going to get what you're asking for anywhere else. We are fine with paying you more than anyone else will pay you. But right now, what we're offering you is more than anyone else will pay you. So go out and prove it to us and then bring it back and we'll sign it because we are going to pay you top dollar. We just don't think that we agree on what top dollar is. So that's the argument for doing it. But again, when you open yourself up like this, if a team so chooses, they can make the contract prohibitive and make it almost impossible for you to plan going forward. And the reason why the idea of the title being called franchise tag is kind of a misnomer because you never really want to put your franchise player on the franchise tag. It's not something that you want to do with a franchise player. The proper use of a franchise player is like a guy that you're just trying to get one more year out of, frankly. Because if you, the best case scenario for a player that you plan on having for 3, 4, 5, 10 years, the best thing you can do is put them on a long-term deal. And if teams haven't learned this by now, sign your quarterback as soon as you know. As soon as you know. And they knew after year two. So then year three, I think, is when you can start negotiating. Sign Lamar to a long-term contract because he's never going to get cheaper. And the reason why the franchise tag is not good for you when you're the team and when you have a franchise player is because it reduces your roster flexibility. So when you sign a player to a long-term deal, you can choose when the payouts are going to be, the big payouts, and you can amortize the signing bonus and guaranteed money across at least 5 years of the deal, which then gives you more flexibility. So what you need to understand is had they signed Lamar Jackson to a long-term deal, they could front-load the contract, but given their roster situation, they'd probably backload the contract and spread the guarantees over the course of the next 5 years, which would allow them to keep more players and make this run. And so you don't want to put them on a franchise because it's hard for you to plan for the future. So like if you're going to lose him, then all right, it makes it more difficult for you to sign other people to long-term deals. It makes it more difficult to plan because presumably you're trying to time it up to make a run. And right now they're in their window. If they think their window is going to continue for a few more years because they signed Lamar Jackson, then there are other players who they can sign to long-term deals. If they feel like their window is closing and they're in rebuild mode, then there are other players that they wouldn't sign. And there are players that they have to release in order to go on a franchise tag. So I don't want to get too deep into the weeds, but the franchise tag in its best, because it's an annoying thing to most players, but at its best, it pressures everyone to get to a deal. And right now, I feel like it's at its worst in the way that it's being utilized. It's just, I mean, in this particular case, or I guess with Lamar and Saquon Barkley right now, like these are, and Saquon, it's just like a product of the position that needs to be addressed. And that's a whole nother podcast probably about the future of running backs and how the compensation is not commensurate with the toll that their body takes, frankly, and their value to their teams because first round picks end up stuck on their teams for 5 years. Those guys never really get to hit the big payday. But again, that's for another podcast. So the other argument for doing non-exclusive versus exclusive is $13 million is, I think, the difference between the exclusive and the non-exclusive. And so
taking from the fourth biggest cap hit in the NFL at the position to the ninth.
Yeah. So that is guys that you can keep, like a lot of guys. $13 million is a lot of guys on a roster, presumably, that you could keep or move on from. And however, it's not worth it if the option is you could lose your starting quarterback. And I don't care if you get two draft picks. You're likely to spend all four of your first round draft picks for the next couple of seasons and not find a player as good, and forget as good, and not find a guy that you can build around, like a serviceable starter. Like that's the number suggests that it'd be hard pressed to find a starting quarterback close to Lamar's level, not even MVP level. So I don't know. I assume you have a lot of questions for me and you want to dive in this deep and you got a bunch of opinions, but the bottom line is the idea that the Falcons, the Dolphins, the Commanders, the Panthers, and the Raiders are on the day that the tag is offered are already leaking that they're not interested is like the hugest concern. And one last thing that just jumped into my head that I want to address because I think it's a big deal. And I feel differently than most people because I think Lamar not having an agent is something that people bring up as a reason why he hasn't gotten a deal done so far. And people say that it's hurting him more than it's helping him. And also the argument is that right now or at the combine, his agent would have been already working on these deals. And right now his agent would be working on the deals to get it done. I think that having an agent is safe, but with safety, I think there is a ban put on the change and the things that you can achieve. Like, that's normally with safety, the give and take is if you want something safer, you're not going to like hit the moonshot, hit the home run, but you're also not going to strike out. And so he's removed those safeties, which to me means that he has a chance at striking out, but he also has a chance at redefining the way that quarterback negotiations go. And the point of an agent is to negotiate. Lamar ain't negotiating. You don't need an agent if you're not negotiating. There is no negotiation to be had. This is the number. Yes? No. That's it. He can send them one of them notes that I sent to my little fifth grade girlfriend. Do you like me? Yes, no. We don't need maybe. And the answer has been no for Lamar. And so he doesn't have to respond. He doesn't need an agent to facilitate that process. And the last thing about agents, and I've said, you've heard me say this before on Debatable and other places, is that we have to understand the incentives of agent. And I had two agents my entire career. They worked together. They were at Sports Stars, Brian and Jim. They were great. I loved them as agents. They were fantastic. But I have to understand, and as much as I like them, I had to remind myself, and it didn't become clear to me until after I was out of the league, that not just them, but all agents, if you look at the reasonable incentives, their incentives are to be in the good graces of the teams. It is not necessarily to die on the hill of one specific player, because they have been agenting for a decade before you, and they will be for decades after you. And those relationships and those friendships and that trust that they've developed with other GMs who also in front office people who tend to be more similar to the agents than they are to the players, like those relationships are there. And the value is not to have one player like you. It's a lot more valuable to be able to have 32 general managers like and respect you. So that's not to say that the agents aren't on the player's side. I sincerely believe that. But I do also believe that it's not like Scott Boras and that they all hate him in Major League Baseball. I do think that none of the football agents want to be in that position where they are just the guy who's caused all these problems for everyone else and who is trying to upset the apple cart. They aren't rewarded for that, and they don't want to be that. So having an agent is fine, but it's great. I have an agent in this business. I'm not the one to want to be doing both of those things. However, I think it's always important to understand where their incentives lie and where the conflicts lie. And when you have an agent, if Lamar would have had an agent at this process, I think he probably would have signed a deal by now. Because at a certain point, the agent would have been like, all right, this is the best we're going to do, you know, and he's going to go back and say, Lamar, this is the best we're going to do. Because the agent's not going to want to piss off Eric DaCosta or piss off everyone else in the league, because he has to continue to work with Eric DaCosta for the next 30 years beyond Lamar. And also, like, his money is tied. His 3% is tied up in that. And the difference between 3% for $130 million and 3% for $200 guaranteed is probably not worth the risk of potentially getting nothing and pissing off every GM in the league. So that's my agent spiel.
So let's figure out where you want to start on this, because there's...
I didn't start already?
What no, I didn't for? Start on our discussion on the second part of this, because like what I'm feeling from you right now is pre-frustration about Lamar Jackson being treated unfairly because he wants this guaranteed contract, and all of the owners are going to basically say, F you, that we gave that to Deshaun Watson. We're not doing that again. Personally, I am much less interested in that being the outcome and much more fascinated in the game theory thoughts of this from both the Ravens and Lamar Jackson.
Let's do that then.
Because if it comes out that it's just a case of collusion and everyone's not, you know, all the owners are secretly working together, much less fun to discuss, much more frustrating. So first of all, Jason LaCanfora reported today that he talked to several executives and general managers and agents, and that these are the list of teams that should, would, and could feasibly sign him to an offer sheet. The Jets, the Falcons, who had been reported by Russini that they were out, the Dolphins, the Panthers, the Lions, the Colts, Houston, New England, Las Vegas, and San Francisco. So not as robust a list. Obviously, it's missing Washington, other people who thought that they could potentially get Lamar Jackson. But still a bigger list than we thought yesterday when several of those teams were reported to be out. What I think is interesting from the game theory perspective on this from the Ravens is they basically, you know, their cap is going to be in a really, they're a ready-made team and their cap's going to be really good, but their offense has been incredibly simple for the last couple of years. Lamar Jackson, if you're going to pay him a guaranteed contract of $50 million a year, whether it's a 3-year deal, a 5-year deal, whatever, however you want to load it, you're locked into that without flexibility in a certain way that's like a franchise tag in a certain way, because it's the first of its kind, this first contract that huge. And when you have a quarterback, people talk about him being 26 years old. It's unprecedented to have a quarterback this good, this young, essentially been on the open market like he is right now. It's also unprecedented to have a 26-year-old quarterback who might be a depreciating asset because he hasn't been as good as he is since 2019. Normally, that goes the other way with quarterbacks going into their primes. And he's played 12 games each of the last two seasons. If you're the Baltimore Ravens, if Lamar Jackson plays 12 games a season because of his frame more than his play style, because he is a skinnier quarterback than certain guys, he plays 12 games a season and you're paying him more money than anyone has ever been paid on a guaranteed basis, you are fucked. Completely fucked. Your team is dead in the water if you're missing him five or six games a year.
Okay. I mean, I disagree, but I mean, that's fine.
Well, he is a one man floor raiser of your offense, right?
Right.
He is a completely unique offensive weapon who's probably underrated as a thrower, but is so dangerous because of his dual threat.
Right.
If he is getting hurt and he's diminished in any way or can't play at all, how can you build a Super Bowl team with 2/3 of a season of Lamar Jackson?
Yeah, so I mean, I guess it depends on what 2/3 you get and how likely he is to be healthy for the playoffs and performing in the playoffs. So, like, I think the tough thing about this is projecting that stuff as fact. I think it's going to be risky, and like, yeah, this is a
when you risk. Say that he is a bigger risk as a 26-year-old quarterback who's performed this well than say if it was Patrick Mahomes, Josh Allen, or Joe Burrow, his Justin Herbert, his contemporaries, coming up for that deal.
Yeah, I think that you could look at, it's different for each of those players that you name, but you can't argue with the fact that he's missed a significant amount of time in the last two seasons. I'm not knocking it. I'm willing to say that whatever discount value you want to add to these players for injury sake, that you can make it higher for Lamar Jackson than you could for these other players, despite the fact that Joe Burrow has a serious injury history. Patrick Mahomes has had a number of injuries, one on a quarterback sneak that was unbelievable. And Josh Allen does not run very smart. He runs a lot, but doesn't run very smart. And that Justin Herbert is being looked after by the Chargers medical staff. That's all reasons to be concerned about all of them.
And Lamar's got the training staff in Baltimore too, which is the only one equally as bad.
Yeah, it's fair. So I think that I'm willing to grant you that in whatever projection model that you would create, that you could put in a bigger number for Lamar Jackson than those other guys, even though I'm not sure that it's fair or true. I'm willing to grant you that, because if you count number of games, you're probably going with Joe Burrow is missing more games. But anyway, it doesn't matter. His style of play combined with his size. And also, I think the reason why I would grant you that is because his physical health is more important to his effectiveness than anyone else. So a MCL tear for Lamar Jackson completely changes your team. MCL tear for, I guess we could talk about Patrick Mahomes last year, limping around on an ankle. It does not completely change your team. You can still win the Super Bowl. So that's fine. Yes. So when you're doing that, you can factor all that in. But I don't think it's a big enough factor for me to be worth taking the risk, because you can't do it in isolation. You have to look at the percentages of putting together a successful roster without him. And that seems like very difficult to do, to build a team around not having a quarterback name somebody who's done it, and also like to find another quarterback. It's like hard as shit to do.
Well, there are, this is why I think there's some interesting game theory stuff with the Ravens, because I think I'm less certain than you are that they don't want Lamar back. I think part of this is like, go out and look around.
Oh, I think you must have me misunderstood. I don't think that they don't want Lamar back. I think that they wouldn't have non-exclusively tagged him, I think, unless one of two things. They didn't care if they had him back, or they felt very confident that nobody was going to make an offer. So, which one of those is more likely is the question.
Right, and I think that the game theory part from Lamar Jackson that I think is really interesting is something I heard our buddy Nate Tice talk about, which is his sales pitch, literally his, because he will be representing himself in this, is that in a less remedial offense with real receivers, like I played in it, he played in Louisville, he can be an even better version of what he was in 2019. And I deserve this massive guaranteed contract, and I can make you a ready-made contender. And that's really interesting as a sales pitch, but it also, in my opinion, if he's going to be the highest paid player in the NFL and the most guaranteed money ever, in a certain way limits his suitors, because if you're a big, terrible team, if you're the Houston Texans, if your roster is bereft of talent, and you have a bunch of first round picks, a big future, can you limit yourself of the optionality of how you can slowly build a roster by going in that way? It makes it someone who has to think Lamar Jackson is the missing piece to winning a Super Bowl, which I think is a really interesting thing. I think he has a really compelling case of selling that, because he is literally the best youngest quarterback to ever be on the market negotiating for himself. But I think it definitely limits the suitors. Like when I saw this list of teams we were talking about, and I thought the Jets, a team like that, San Francisco, they'd have to wait till after the draft, but trading a first and second in Trey Lance, even Detroit, Miami, like these are
immediate Super Bowl contenders. So, so the Miami thing, they don't have a first round pick because of their
same with San Francisco. They would both have to wait until to do this deal until after the draft, and then it could be the 24 and 25 draft.
Right. So it's exciting. The thing about Lamar is that's different than I think any of the other quarterbacks that we've named. Well, I guess probably not Josh Allen, because his running ability is not as explosive as Lamar's, but it's just as effective as Lamar's. You remember when Le'Veon Bell was trying to argue that he should get paid for being a number one running back and a number two receiver?
Yeah.
It's a stretch, but his numbers kind of suggested that maybe he was worth a lot more. Lamar Jackson is kind of worth a number one running back, a number one quarterback, and a couple offensive linemen. Like you automatically have a running game when he shows up, like an effective running game just by him walking in the door. You've already improved your running back. You've improved your offensive line run blocking. You've improved your offensive line pass blocking, because everyone rushes against the Ravens differently because they're more afraid of Lamar running than anything else. So you improve all of that. You could argue one way or the other for your receivers, but you've immediately improved your tight end. So like arguing that the amount of money that you have guaranteed to Lamar is like limiting in some way is hard for me to wrap my head around. I understand that it might make you less flexible, but it doesn't necessarily make your team worse.
It's limiting for a rebuilding team because you don't get.
I think it's ridiculous.
You get a young, you get a young superstar quarterback, but you're not paying him the rookie scale, which is the limiting factor. And that's like one of the things that I think is interesting about the teams that could be involved in this, whether it's Houston or Indianapolis or Detroit, is I do wonder the calculus of the Ravens, if they're like, you know what, some of these teams that need a quarterback are going to be in the top five. And like, can I get multiple first round picks for Lamar? And it's like, maybe the one thing that could be worth giving up on this guy before paying him is a rookie scale version of Bryce Young or CJ Stroud or Anthony Richardson, if you believe in them that way. And I think that's an interesting game theory too, because like we talked about this, like the price for prospects is fascinating. Look at like the RG3 trade, look at the other quarterback trades up, and those are for non-established quarterbacks. So like the concept of like getting even more value, I guess, however they negotiate a sign and trade for someone like Lamar, those can be franchise altering moves. Like when you look back on them.
Yeah. And the one thing I was thinking about also is like when you, the tough thing about signing Lamar is, and you've heard me make this point before, is that once you pay your quarterback, it's now time for the GM and the front office to do their job. Yeah. Because you have to find value elsewhere, which means you have to draft really well and also be effective in free agency, which doesn't mean hitting home runs as much as it means bringing in people to fill holes at the right price. And so it's tough to both sign a franchise quarterback to a long-term deal and then lose 2 years of first-round draft picks, because those, that's presumably where you can find like people who perform – yeah, who can perform at a Hall of Fame potential level or at least an all-pro level and be paid under market value, which is why the Jets are a team that should be, because they are due for some bad draft picks because they killed it recently. So they might want to go ahead and move these picks and sign Lamar Jackson if they're capable, because that would be a roster. And then they have a quarterback and a team that is pretty well suited around him and elsewhere. That's like not unlike the Ravens roster wise, with the exception of they have a real number one receiver. I guess Bateman felt like he was number one receiver, but he couldn't stay healthy.
Yeah. So doesn't have the body for it.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, I think that's a team that should be, I know they're in the Aaron Rodgers sweepstakes, but they should also, if they're going to give up two first rounders for Aaron Rodgers, I kind of feel like it's a better bet to go with Lamar Jackson, but I could be wrong.
Yeah, and there's an interesting part of that is that, you know, Aaron Rodgers is guaranteed $58.6 million this coming season, and the Jets seem intent on giving up more, or at least as we reported, on giving up more draft capital to have the Packers eat some of that salary. So if the numbers are a factor there, that's interesting. To me, the one that I keep coming back to is Atlanta. And stylistically, seeing a running quarterback with Arthur Smith, he made a pretty enticing offense with Ryan Tannehill being his running quarterback. Seeing Lamar throw to Kyle Pitts, who we have all collectively been frustrated with because he ruined all of our fantasy football seasons. But Lamar is great at throwing to tight ends. Yeah. The reason I always say he's like somewhat of an underrated passer is because of how aggressive he can be in the middle of the field and effective at doing that. And I cannot think of a better situation than an Arthur Smith offense for him to do that.
Yeah. If you just sub Lamar in for Ryan Tannehill and look back at the way that that offense played, you'd be pretty impressed. And Lamar is a better passer than Ryan Tannehill too. I think Ryan Tannehill's, not that Lamar isn't going to be heavily dependent on play action, which I think he probably is, in part because he is play action. Snapping the ball to him, all right, you're already play action. So it's every play that he has, unless it's 3rd and 13, you have to respect his ability to run. So him down there with Kyle Pitts, a more explosive version at tight end, and Drake London, who's a big wide body receiver, big catch radius to address whatever accuracy issues Lamar might have, I think would be really attractive in a division that feels like it's up for grabs. Mm-hmm. I like that option. I like Detroit. Yeah. I like Detroit. It's a nice young roster that they're building around. And we already talked about, I think Washington is a place. Well, I know they're out of it too, but it's another place where Eric Bieniemy could really figure out some things with Lamar Jackson.
I think they're interesting options. I think New England's interesting too. Like we saw a couple weeks of successful Cam Newton with Belichick before he got COVID and everything fell apart over the next year and a half. San Francisco, obviously, if you put Lamar Jackson on them, pick him to win the Super Bowl.
Oh my gosh, that's crazy. How so? That's possible if they wait till after the draft. You think
That's possible.
They have, I guess they would have to, the tough thing is, I don't know what their salary cap looks like. I imagine you took a look at it. Do they have what it takes to make this?
They could financially do it over several years. And that would be a really interesting one.
Swimsuit, check. Sunscreen, check. Phone charger, check. Don't forget to pack the 5-hour energy. It fits great in a pocket or in a carry-on. and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5hourenergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5hourenergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We all go through things socially where we don't feel like ourselves, where we don't feel like going out, where we feel drained, or we're not bursting with energy. And when you're not feeling right, that's where BetterHelp can come in. It's helpful for learning positive coping skills, how to set boundaries in so many different ways, for which it empowers you to be the best version of yourself. It isn't just for those who experience major trauma. Therapy is for more than those people, and it's there to help you. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. It's there for you. It's there to help you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp.
Visit BetterHelp.com/DF today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/DF.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur. Barnstown, Kentucky. 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The next part that I want to talk about with you a tiny bit is, and this is something that I think you have a unique perspective on, just being a realist, is this going to be an inflection point for future star quarterbacks of how they handle their business? Not with the agent, no agent thing, but about forcing teams to offer fully guaranteed money for quarterbacks in this situation. The reason I say that is Lamar Jackson, everyone agrees, is awesome. Really, really, really awesome. I think everyone also agrees that he's slightly down a tier from Patrick Mahomes, Josh Allen, and Joe Burrow. And that is fine. And I wonder, what I want to ask you is, like, if those three guys in theory were in this position, one, do you think there could be a sort of wink, wink collusion about not paying them guaranteed money, or will they be in line for guaranteed money? And the other part is guys in that 6 to 15 range, that elite quarterback who's not quite Patrick Mahomes, first ballot Hall of Famer level, are those guys going to use guaranteed money as a sticking point to have more agency and player movement early in their careers to negotiate where they want to be, when they want to be, how long they want to be there?
I mean, do I think there's going to be an inflection point? Probably. Yeah. But do those players have that power? Absolutely. I don't know that they'll exercise it. And we don't have to have a fight over where Lamar Jackson ranks in among those people, because never mind. I won't fall into that trap. The point of
I was just trying to give like the context that he is excellent, but I assume that if Patrick Mahomes asked for
Patrick Mahomes is in a tier of his own. Yeah. And the rest of them guys, I think, are close enough to Lamar that they don't get their own tier. So the reason why it doesn't I don't see it happening is because they don't have the leverage or the time until they get to the end of a contract, and then they'd have to actually sit out. And quarterbacks aren't going to do that. It's just not something that's happened traditionally for top quarterbacks. And so
why would they have to sit out? Like, couldn't they just take play it to the end of the string?
No, I mean, they have to sit out on the franchise tag.
Okay, I got it.
I mean, I guess they could sign the franchise tag and then sign it the next year and then assume that the team won't be able to afford to sign them to the third franchise because it's never been done because it's cost prohibitive. But that's what I mean. They have to go to Kirk Cousins' route.
Okay.
Which I don't see very many quarterbacks doing that, because if the GMs get smart and start offering guys that have solidified themselves, if you won an MVP in your second year, then we're going to offer you a contract in the third year. Then the player would then have to reject that big time guaranteed money that year, the following year, and then reject it again and play through the franchise tag for two more seasons. Like, the time's not on their side. At some point, they're going to take that money.
Yeah. And I guess my question on that is, if Lamar makes that the sort of protocol moving forward,
right,
wouldn't that be the inflection point of these guys are getting way more guaranteed money because we're terrified of someone doing what Lamar Jackson is doing and not playing?
Oh, will they get more away with it? Yeah. Will they get more guaranteed money? I mean, I think they get more guaranteed money every year because the contracts go up every year. They can continue to get more guaranteed money. Like, if it's going to be,
there'll be fully guaranteed contracts for top quarterbacks at some point.
Nope. I mean, because the point I'm making is they would, unless the teams just don't want to mess around and just sign it, but they would have two more years under contract with the players that the player would have to reject a non-fully guaranteed contract. They would have to play through their fourth season, then play through their fifth year option, and then play through a franchise tag, and then play through a franchise tag, or decide to sit out on the first franchise tag year, which is at this point, they would have been in the NFL for 6 years without signing an extension, and somebody standing next to them like, all right, I'm not going to give you 300 guaranteed, but I give you 170 guaranteed. Yeah, they're going to sign it. And so
should Lamar have done that? If we're looking back on that, would it have been the more prudent decision?
I mean, definitely would have been a decision I made a long time ago, but I don't know that I would have been in for the fight that Lamar seems clearly to be up for. So, I would have been like, yeah, you say 130, 140, but I'm not as talented as Lamar.
Yeah.
And I'm not as valuable to any organization that I've ever been a part of. I mean, no one is. There are very few people that are as valuable to their organization as Lamar Jackson is. So if I had those experiences, then maybe I would have a little bit more like resolve in the situation. But I haven't, and most players have it, and most players won't have that resolve. And then again, they'll have the agent standing next to them like, go ahead and sign that thing.
I'm just realizing we need the quarterbacks to collude against the owners. It's the only way.
But they never will. Like, they could, but they never will. And I think, it's been interesting, and I'm certainly rooting for Lamar, as it feels like most people seem to be on Lamar's side, because it seems like it's hard to make an argument for the other side. Although I see the logic in the Ravens' position, but it's hard to, I think, make sense of it all.
Yeah, I don't think anyone's like pro management. I think people are, well, maybe some people are not admitted, but like, I think the question is more like just the larger team building question, as everyone's like their own fantasy football GM of how would you build out this roster around Lamar Jackson? How would you get this done?
That's AKA pro management.
Yeah, well, or just pro hypothetical situation. Pro trade machine.
I just see my own son, who is a Ravens fan and named our cat Lamar, is very concerned about Lamar Jackson leaving. And he's like, I thought they had him under contract. He's like upset. Like, he's going to violate the contract. Like, what? You're 10. What do you know? And like, we're a player's first household, buddy. Let's get it together. We don't care about the contract, or we don't care about the team. We care about Lamar getting his money. Like, no, he cares about his Ravens keeping Lamar and winning.
Oh, this is going to be great. I can't wait for you to take Declan to a Wizards game, and he's going to be like, load management is fucking bullshit, Dad. Get these guys out here. Back in my day, the stars played every day.
Yeah, he's definitely – he's pro him, is what it comes down to. It's like,
it's what most fans are.
Yeah, he doesn't care. Exactly. He doesn't care the way you keep Lamar Jackson. He doesn't care if he's happy about it. He's just like, don't take him off of my favorite team. That's all it comes down to. So, yeah, we'll see how it works out. I don't know. Do you have any – what do you want? What do you – like, I know what I want. I want him to figure it out with the Ravens because I want my house to be happy.
I mean, what do I want? I want him to be in Washington because I grew up here and have had 1 year of good quarterback play, and it was 2012. Outside of that, which I don't want for Lamar because that's cruel to wish anyone to be a Commander, is honestly, I want him to end up on San Francisco. I think that's the coolest outcome.
That'd be so cool.
It'd be beautiful. It would be beautiful football to watch.
Christian McCaffrey?
Oh, yeah. Debo Kittle?
Debo? I mean, can you imagine what Kyle Shanahan, what type of things he was willing to do to get Lamar Jackson out there in the red and gold?
Also, we talked about how you had to defend five guys on that offense at all times. How about six? Can I interest you in six?
Oh, my gosh. I kind of want to see it happen just for a week when they win by 60 points with that defense, too. Right. They win by 60 points, then we'll have to break it up. It'll be like the Warriors. They added – it's like KD. There we go. That's what we're running with. We're running with the KD 73-win Warriors, or the Warriors 73-win Warriors adding KD is the same as the 49ers adding Lamar Jackson. Let's make it happen.
That's right.
All right. I promise that if we had time, we could get to the other stuff. I feel like we don't have time.
We'll talk Giants next week. I actually think there's plenty on Saquon and Daniel Jones to unpack.
All right. Fun times. NFL never stops. We didn't do any basketball. I had some basketball hot takes I want to run by you, but I'll save those for next week too. All right, Charlie. Appreciate it. Thanks, Sarah, Abbott, Adi Khan, and of course, Christina Buslow.
This is the Dominique Foxworth Show.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.